Today's sponsor is Datadog, a real-time monitoring platform that unifies metrics, logs, and distributed traces from your cloud containers and orchestration software. Datadog's container-centric monitoring features allow you to track the health and performance of your dynamic container environment. The container map provides a bird's-eye view of your container fleet, and the live container view searches, groups, and filters your containers with any criteria, like tags, pods, or workspaces. To start monitoring your container clusters, sign up for a free trial today, and Datadog will send you a free t-shirt. Visit datadog.com/container-cloudcast to get started. That's datadog.com/container-cloudcast.
Cloudcast Media presents from the Massive Studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to The Cloudcast. We are coming to you live from the Massive Cloudcast Studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hope everybody's doing well. Tough week, couple weeks here in the United States, but a lot going on, politics and some things that unfortunately are affecting some people in a very disproportionate way. I don't really want to get into that. I know there are lots of forums for those sorts of things, and I'm going to try and keep my frustrations about some of those things off the podcast and try and make a difference in other ways. But anyways, hope everybody's doing well. We get to the end here of June 2022, kind of the mid-year point of the year, almost to the mid-year point of the year. Hope everybody's doing well. I'm going to kind of give a preview over the next couple of weeks. We are going to do a show today. Today's a Sunday show, not a Sunday perspective show, but a Sunday show. We have a great conversation really talking about, what's going on with VMware and the acquisition, really dive into it. I know I've been sort of hinting around at what's been going on. This was the show that I had queued up to really sort of dig into that. We're going to do this show this week. And just to give you a quick preview, because I know some of you are going to do summer vacations and so forth, we're going to have a really fun show. Aaron and I and Brandon Wichert from the Software Defined Talk Show is going to join us. Brandon's been on a number of times before, but he joins us for a fun sort of three-person mid-year show, what's been going on in the cloud for the last half year. And then we'll get back into things. We're taking July 3rd off for the 4th of July American holiday. So a couple of shows, really good shows for the next couple of weeks. We will take the 3rd off, and then we will be back again on July 10th. So just wanted to kind of give you a heads up. I know some folks try to plan out what their podcasts look like over the next couple of weeks, especially if they're doing holidays or road trips or anything along those lines. So we have a really good show this week, fun show. It's a little bit longer show, a good in-depth discussion with our friend Dave Vellante, who is from theCUBE. So many of you know Dave from theCUBE. He's at all the major trade shows. He is a world-class analyst, founded the company called Wikibon, also is a big contributor to siliconangle.com. So Dave is one of the people that we really go to when we want to not only, dive into the trends that are going on, but really kind of get into the business side of things. And obviously with the VMware acquisition happening, $61 billion, if not the largest, one of the largest acquisitions in history, which should close fairly soon. There's about a 40-day window. But Dave and I really get into, what's going on? What does the acquisition look like? What do the numbers look like? Dave has broken it down and really has gotten in-depth in it. So I think you're going to really enjoy this, especially if you have any technical interest or business interest, or your job is somehow tied to VMware. This is definitely something that you should be looking at, as well as if you're not tied to VMware, but you're working with companies who work in that ecosystem. Very, very interesting show. So we're going to get to that right after the break.
Still using SSH keys, RDP logins, and database credentials? It's time to access your infrastructure like it's no longer 1999. StrongDM is the only modern infrastructure access platform. It creates a seamless, secure, and observable air gap between your staff and the critical infrastructure that powers your company. Instantly revoke access to every database, Kubernetes cluster, or server with a click. Automatically log every query, SSH, and kubectl command to know who did what, when, and where across your stack. Eliminate credentials from end-user workflows to deploy access that's zero trust and least privilege by default. Trust it by your peers at Peloton, SoFi, Yext, and Chime. StrongDM is the only way to deploy secure access controls in a way folks love to use. But who believes an ad? Check it out for yourself with a no BS demo. Sign up at www.strongdm.com/get-a-demo.
Today's show is sponsored by Revelo. Having a hard time hiring engineers? Revelo lets you sidestep the competitive U.S. talent market by helping you hire skilled remote engineers in Latin America. They provide full-time senior engineers with 5+ years of experience who are embedded in your team like a normal hire. Revelo is an end-to-end solution that handles sourcing, vetting, hiring, payroll, and compliance. They also don't force you to pay for things you don't want, like a project manager. You can interview any engineer before deciding. All engineers are proficient in English and have high time zone alignment with U.S.-based teams. You don't have that painful 24-hour turnaround where you have a question for an engineer who is on the other side of the world. Check out Revelo today. Go to revelo.com/cloudcast. Check it out. That's revelo.com/cloudcast. And we're back. And folks, you know, if you haven't been paying attention, you haven't heard about what's been going on with VMware, you've probably been living under a rock for 3 or 4 months. Announcement of the biggest, probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest technology acquisitions over the last decade, if not of all time, $61 billion. And you know, whenever big things like this happen, we love to go talk to our friends who focus on this space a ton, and not only, you know, look at the technology trends, but also, you know, are able to dig into the numbers, dig into the business, and figure out what it all means. And so really excited to have a longtime friend of the show and you know, good personal friend, Dave Vellante, who both CEO and co-host of theCUBE, as well as you know, co-founder of SiliconANGLE and Wikibon. David, welcome back to the show. Great to have you back.
Hey, thanks for having me, Brian. You know I'm a big fan. I love coming on Cloudcast.
Yeah, we had you on earlier. We were talking about the concept of super cloud. I know you and I were just talking a second ago. You have a ton of stuff, you know, coming up. The great news is theCUBE is back live at lots of events. Give folks, real quick, before we dive into this VMware stuff, you know, what is the second half of the year look for you guys, and what are some of the big highlights where people are going to, you know, not only see you and John and Dave Nicholson and everybody, but just some of the highlight events coming up?
Yeah, so as you know, we've been on the road. Everybody wanted to jam their stuff into May and June before the July holidays. We were just at Snowflake last week. Before that, we did Dell Tech World. We did Red Hat Summit, which was small and awesome. We did Veeam On. We're at Remars this week. We did, as I say, Snowflake last week. We got HPE coming up. And in the fall, we've got in the July, two great events with AWS Summit in New York City. And we have Reinforce in Boston. Looking forward to that. We're doing theCUBE on SuperCloud in August, early August. And then VMware Explore. And then the fall season is going to be really busy. So it's so great to see people again in airports and at events, and everybody's really psyched to be back face to face.
Yeah, you guys probably are as good a litmus test as you know, what's going on, the rebound of the industry, and just in terms of events, because people love events. They haven't seen each other in a couple of years, so yeah, it's awesome to hear that they're reinvigorated, they're restarted, they're going to be going again throughout the year. So that's awesome to hear.
You know what's interesting, Brian, is every event we've done, almost every event anyway, it succeeded. They get a lot of last minute registrations, but you know, 10 to 12, 15% higher attendance than people expected. Everybody's being conservative now, yeah, prudently, but it's been awesome.
Good to hear. Well, interesting thing happened about a month or so ago. Broadcom made a, you know, $61 to $65, $66 billion offer for VMware. Let's start there. Like, did you expect this? Were you hearing any insight? I mean, like, I'm not shocked that VMware eventually got acquired. I think people, you know, were like, you know, there's some suitors out there. They make a ton of money. But were you surprised that this happened so quickly after they, you know, sort of became a company that was free from having a parent company after so long?
I certainly was. I mean, I didn't see this coming. Although, you know, looking back, it's like, okay, it makes some sense because, like you said, they've been what, 6-7 months as an independent company, and then wham. And you look at their quarter; they did not have a great quarter. They're not growing the way they had hoped to grow. You look at, you know, Pat moved on, and now it's like, okay, you've got this asset. What does Michael want to do with it? And so it kind of makes sense. And I think there's rationale behind what Broadcom's doing, and we can get into that.
Yeah, I think you wrote a really great piece that was called Broadcom Will Tame the VMware Beast. It's on SiliconANGLE. We've got a link to it in the show notes. And you did a really, really good job of, you know, not only laying out the headlines, what were the numbers, but kind of digging into to where it goes. And I think the thing that's, there's been a lot of interesting articles written from VMware insiders and others, but I think the one sentence or the one line that I feel like we should dig into the most is this thing that basically says, accretive acquisition bringing $8.5 billion of EBITDA by year three. And I think, you know, we could spend an hour digging into that, but give folks a sense, break down what that one sentence means in terms of the goals for Broadcom, but also what it likely means for VMware from today going forward.
Yeah, so people that may not know Broadcom, they are an incredible company that's essentially been formed through, you know, roll-ups of, you know, acquiring companies like an Emulex, many of in the audience remember. Yeah. Remember those guys and many, many others. And they purchased, you know, Symantec and CA, which, you know, we can get to in the logic of software. But Broadcom runs its business. So its CEO is a gentleman named Hock Tan. He's generally regarded as a brilliant operator and acquirer of companies. He identifies companies that have fantastic cash flow. He lasers in on synergies, and he goes in, he cuts anything that is speculative, and he focuses hard on the top paying customers that are relying on the products and services, and he optimizes that. He's been a master at it. And this company has, you know, I don't know exactly today, but it's, you know, with the market crash, but, you know, $250 billion market value, you know, much higher than a lot of the companies to which it sells. So right. The accretive acquisition, he's promised to bring $8.5 billion of EBITDA to VMware, to his shareholders, within 3 years. And today, that EBITDA, you know, fiscal 22 is, you know, under $5 billion. So how's he going to do that? He's going to cut sales and marketing. He's going to cut discretionary R&D spending and speculation. And we could talk about more about what's possibly going to be in the chopping block.
Yeah. I you know, it is one of those things. It's, you know, if you don't really, really, really dig into our industry and pay attention to a lot of things, you may think, well, you know, I've heard Broadcom's name. I know who they are. They make chips. And you think, well, you know, the chip industry is what it is. But like you said, you know, when you start to dig into their numbers, and you did a really good job in the article, basically, you know, they make huge margins. They make, you know, huge gross profit. You know, they run software, you know, it's not just they run hardware business, they run software business at, you know, 90% margins. I mean, they're almost, you know, they're not nearly at the level of, you know, an Amazon, who I know you admire, like, you know, AWS, you admire like crazy, but, you know, their numbers are in the same ballpark in terms of just magnitude of how efficient they are.
It's incredible, Brian. I mean, you know, if you just take their last quarter and multiply it by four, they're over $30 billion run rate in revenue, growing at over 20% a year. They're, like you said, they make chips. They make right. hardware. Now, they've acquired some software companies, but they have a 75, 76% gross margin. Their operating margin is 61%. I mean, just to give you a sense of that, Oracle is an incredibly profitable company. Its operating margins are, you know, the 40% plus. I mean, Oracle's amazingly profitable. They don't spend a lot on SG&A as a percentage of revenue. You know, they spend on R&D, but not overspend. But the thing is, their free cash flow, 50% of their revenue goes back to free cash flow. And they take that and they probably send 50 to 60% of that back to shareholders. And that's how they run the company. And that's why they've got $230 billion market cap. Compare that to VMware, which is, you know, let's say $12 billion, but growing last quarter at 3%. Yeah, they got a little bit of higher gross margin because they're pure software. But their operating margin is in the 20s, which is solid.
Yeah.
But they spend a lot on SG&A. They spend a ton on R&D, and they don't, you know, send as much free cash flow. Even though we think of VMware as a cash machine, the Broadcom's just going to aim right at SG&A and R&D, and it's going to cut and optimize profitability. It's very clear.
Yeah, yeah. It's there's a really good slide that Broadcom presented when they made the offer, and it's called multiple levers to increase VMware's profitability. We'll put a link to it in the show notes and stuff. Walk folks through what this means. I mean, it's obviously, there's the normal things that happen with acquisitions where you go, we both have, back office functions. Those oftentimes are redundant. Some of those things might go away and, maybe we'll consolidate some sales forces, but this isn't really about that. This is about something very different in terms of, how it's, and oftentimes with acquisitions, you go, we're acquiring them for their technology. We're excited about all the future things they're doing. This isn't necessarily about that either. This is, like you said, what are the biggest cash cows and how do we optimize those?
And I think that I would answer that question and say two things. One is the what's happening in the industry. Like, what's the rationale for this? And what does it tell us about what's happening in the industry? And then the second, very important to a lot of your listeners, is what's going to happen to VMware and the ecosystem. So if you think about, think about hardware boxes, servers and storage and networking, what's happening is you're seeing a barbell effect. And imagine a picture on the left. We had a CPU in the middle. It was a CPU centric environment. And now you have GPUs and NPUs and network interface cards and smart NICs and accelerators and RAID controllers. And Broadcom's premise, and I think they're right, is that we're moving from a world that's CPU centric to one that's connectivity centric around all these other supporting components. And you're seeing that everywhere. And they're making a lot of money doing that. And then on the other side, you're seeing infrastructure software. So that's like the box is getting hollowed out. Take Jeff Clark at Dell. He says, hey, 80% of my engineers are software engineers. Yeah, because they're building microcode, or in the case of VMware, you've got infrastructure software. So Broadcom's going hard after that, after both, but now expanding into infrastructure software with CA, with Symantec, and now VMware, it's going to be half their revenue. A gentleman named Tom Krause runs their software business. You might say, what does Broadcom know about software? Well, Tom Krause is a 10-year veteran of Broadcom, and he runs their software business at a 90% gross margin. And he knows a lot about finance. I know that much.
Yeah. And I mean, so, they in essence, they run it like a private equity company, right? They find known brands that, don't have to establish themselves, and they find the most profitability out of that.
Yeah. And they focus on the tip of the pyramid of the customers. They're not one of these companies that's going for growth at all costs. They don't want to spend a dollar to make 50 cents of revenue. That's just not how they operate.
Right.
They want to spend, a dime on marketing or nothing on marketing and make $10. That's again, how they operate the company. Right. So you see that value flowing to both silicon and software. And then, so what does that mean for VMware? And I'd love to get your thoughts on this. I mean, when you look at speculation, like, of speculative things like Tanzu, for example,
right?
What's going to happen to that product line? They're probably spending a lot of money to attract developers. What's going to happen to security? Are they anywhere they're not making money and they're not in that margin profile? Broadcom, in my opinion, is either going to kill it or sell it. Now, the security business they could sell.
Yeah.
They bought Carbon Black for $2 billion and some other assets. So there's something they have to delever. They've promised to delever to work down the debt. But so I would think security, I would think Tanzu, and I'm very concerned about Project Monterey. And we should talk about that.
Yeah. I there's a couple of pieces to VMware that have always been interesting to me. When I first started working with them, sort of adjacent to them, was 2008, 2009, and there was a lot of interesting things happening in virtualization. And by about 2010, maybe 11-ish, give or take, a year or two, they sort of stopped announcing much that was interesting. It was like, yes, we've sort of solved all of the problems. Yes, I can do a bigger VM, and they stopped, kind of talking about what was new in vSphere, and everything became sort of adjacent to it. It was VDI, and it was networking, and it was storage, and the whole other areas. And so you think about that and you go, okay, so they have this product that is in 90% of all the big companies and in lots of mid-sized companies and so forth. So like you said, they don't have to go find new customers. They have most of them. Their core product doesn't really need much other than probably just some incremental, you know, making sure there's not a big vulnerability. I mean, that's for the most part, they only talk about, well, there's a vulnerability. And so it's a, you know, has something that has to get patched. And then the other thing that I always have to explain to people sometimes is, so, you know, the portfolio has always been interesting, and if it's successful or not, you know, who knows? It depends. But the other thing that they did that, and this probably leads to, you know, their SG&A numbers being so crazy was, you know, they basically would structure the way they sold stuff. You know, if you were a sales rep, and let's say you had a customer who had a $10 million ELA, well, if you went back to that customer and said, great, let's just renew for another $10 million for, you know, the next year or 2 years or whatever it was, you as a sales rep made zero. And the only way you ever made any more money was by piling these other new things into the ELA and so forth. And if people didn't want those things or they didn't need them, you know, you created some weird situations. And what that meant was, like, you couldn't do what Microsoft would do, which was, I'm going to reinforce my platform by just piling more features into it. Well, the sales reps wouldn't make any money. And so, you know, Pat had to keep going out and buying companies to, you know, they created this weird set of incentives that I think, you know, you've sort of highlighted on the balance sheet have resulted in the core product still makes a lot of money, but everything else is just this really, really expensive thing, whether or not it's good technology or not. They created a strange structure for, you know, incentivizing customers versus incentivizing their own sales.
You know, it's funny. I mean, the history of VMware is kind of fascinating. I mean, under EMC, you know, they did the federation and that was kind of funky, but they kind of respected the ecosystem, but it was still weird.
Yeah.
And then of course, you know, Dell used VMware as a piggy bank to restructure its whole balance sheet and take a company public and then spin it out. And I mean, that was just incredible. And now you got a new owner that is going to totally change the incentive system. It's not around growth,
right?
It's not even around innovation. It's around EBITDA. That's what Broadcom's all about. And so I don't know if like NSX or vSAN make money. I presume they do because they're software.
Yeah.
But I would think, I mean, if they don't, they're going to be in trouble, and they're going to have, you know, 4 or 5 quarters to figure that out. I wonder too, even, you know, VMware Cloud on AWS, which by all accounts is doing pretty well. Will Broadcom look at that and say, why are we giving our customers, you know, a path to AWS? Why don't we just keep them where they are? Or maybe not. Maybe it's a really profitable product because it's expensive. I don't know. I don't know the inner workings, but I guarantee it's not going to take long for Broadcom to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like if I were, you know, at a high level looking at the portfolio, obviously ESX stays. My gut would say, and this would be the interesting math, I guess, would be the VMware on AWS feels like it's a hedge. And that, you know, like in the normal world, you'd go, well, you know, I have certain hedges in my portfolio. They make sense because that says, keep my customer on the same technology. If they want to go to the cloud, cool. And if they don't, you know, but the other ones, the ones that are interesting to me are NSX, the networking and vSAN, because to me, you're right. They're good technologies. They're probably profitable. They're probably not profitable enough, you know, at least through the initial filter they'll use. And it'll become interesting as to whether or not, you know, they sort of dangle them in front of people like NetApp or HP or Cisco or somebody who's like, boy, I would love to always be attached to, you know, to VMware because I know it's not going anywhere, right? Like, you know, that to me would be an interesting one to see if, you know, gets sort of immediately spun out. You know, and I think you wrote this in your paper, like, I don't know that Tanzu, I think unfortunately Tanzu has just been through so many, I don't know, so many gyrations and so many things that it probably doesn't make it out of this. And that probably signals to people like, look, it's, you know, we're going to stop thinking about being an application company, even though we have stuff like Symantec now and the other stuff. But like, we're like you said, we're going to do the only the profitable stuff. And I don't know that anybody buys Tanzu. Like, I don't think it's a thing you can spin out necessarily.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think Broadcom is very transparent. This is what we're going to do. And this is when we're going to do it. And we've done it before. And so when you think about something like Tanzu, I don't see how you just pull that out and sell it like you do security. I think that is a really interesting asset.
And then, although, you know what would be a really interesting thing is for somebody like IBM to acquire the Tanzu stuff, because then they've got a hedge, right? Because most of the OpenShift stuff that they already own is on VMware, and they could use Tanzu in all these accounts that VMware or that IBM essentially manages people's VMware for them. I mean, option there, although they're heavily leveraged with Red Hat too.
I mean, but you know this better than I do. I mean, Red Hat, you know, OpenShift is the only, you know, container platform that's making really any serious money,
right?
You know, a little bit of Rancher, I guess, and you know, but Tanzu is an uphill battle. And then what about, you know, EUC? I mean, it's a rock fight with Microsoft. You wonder, okay, you know, what's the future of that? And then, you know, again, Project Monterey. I really want to. So I think there's an interesting potential play there.
That one feels like it falls into the, you know. It becomes the ones, and for folks who don't know, give folks a you know, cliff notes. Yeah. What is Project Monterey?
So it's really the best way to describe it is go back to sort of AWS when they realized that they couldn't get the performance and the performance improvements and the cost efficiencies that they wanted out of x86. So they tried Intel. I mean, so they tried or Intel x86. So they worked with AMD. They still couldn't get it. So they started to work. That's when they started to work with Annapurna, company that they ended up buying for $350 million. And they essentially built Nitro, which is sort of a combination of a new hypervisor and SmartNIC that enables them to use different processors, you know, x86, Intel, AMD, Graviton, Trainium. And so their ARM, it's an ARM-based platform. Mm. And the benefit of it is gives optionality and it's on a much higher performance curve, and you can get the tape out, which is, you know, from design to actually when you're making semiconductors, much, much faster. They've compressed that cycle. So AWS is on a new curve, and I don't think a lot of people really appreciate this. They're on a new cost curve, not necessarily lower price, but lower cost. So the assumption is everybody needs a Nitro equivalent. That's why Google's doing it. That's why Azure's doing it. That's why Alibaba's doing it. They have the scale.
Right.
And VMware said, hey, we're going to initiate Project Monterey, which includes NVIDIA and Pensando and, you know, obviously Intel. And we're going to provide that optionality. And so they're working on that project. And, you know, the big question is Broadcom going to kill it? Now, it's interesting because AWS is developing custom silicon. Broadcom has the capability to develop custom silicon. It has the relationship with the foundries like TSM. So you could see VMware knocking on some Broadcom doors saying, hey, guys, let's do this together. But there's got to be a business case around it. And the last thing I'll say is when you look at what Broadcom did with it's essentially its Bluefield, NVIDIA Bluefield or Pensando-like product, they killed it. Because they said, this is too speculative. We can't make money on it. But go let the market prove it. And then Hock Tan will buy it back.
Yeah. Yeah. You
know, that's how they operate.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. And it definitely changes from, you know, the old dynamics where, like, I remember talking to Intel 5-6 years ago, maybe 7 years ago, and they would go, yeah, but, you know, our big part of our market is the Dells and the HPs and the Ciscos and the Super Micros. And then we have these seven other customers, you know, the special seven or whatever they would call them. That was, you know, the big cloud providers. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, no, our big customers are the big cloud providers. We're hoping they don't abandon us because they're all building their own thing and they're trying to figure out, you know, can they still do what they do to the Dells and HPs and Ciscos and partner with them? Or like you said, does that barbell take over and the CPU doesn't matter and everything specialized chips?
Yeah. I mean, Broadcom has become such a critical supplier to companies like Dell. They've, you know, been able to raise prices and command premiums. We've seen that in the supply chain. And there's definitely a trend toward merchant silicon. You know, I mean, Cisco is kind of the, you know, the one holdout. But, you know, very clearly its competitors and networking are moving in that direction. And the server companies are moving in toward merchant silicon. So, I mean, Broadcom has just taken a bunch of kind of boring but important assets that didn't have, you know, the value chain locked up, and they've locked up the value chain.
Right.
And so, right. And they've done an awesome job of it. I mean, it's incredible.
I would have to expect, you know, you can make a lot of cuts. I mean, I've seen some speculation in some of these blogs that, you know, if VMware turns into anything like some of the other companies, Symantec or CA, like they may be cutting 60, 70, 80% of the people. But beyond cuts, which obviously, you know, reduce a ton of expense and so forth, I mean, you have to expect, and I don't have any inside baseball, but I have to expect, you know, this is a perfect opportunity for Broadcom to start saying, hey, we need to renegotiate all these contracts that we have with vSphere customers. And you know what? Prices are going up because you don't have an alternative. And, you know, we've got a lot of money sunk into this thing. I would have to imagine that's coming here in the next, you know, within that 3-year period, right?
I think there's no question that the prices are going up, especially, you know, for those customers that are, you know, basically locked into VMware. I mean, think about the business case for switching. I mean, so, you know, let's talk about what are your options, right? Can you do like an Acropolis migration? Yeah, you certainly can do that for some of your portfolio, application portfolio. You're going to do that for everything. You know, you've got business processes that are wired to VMware, and it's good. VMware is really good.
The market has sort of proven, you know, that you can try all you want. I mean, Red Hat tried it, Nutanix tried it, Microsoft. Like you can't beat their technology. At some point, you either can't beat their technology, or you can't cut through that ELA or that lock in for operations.
You know what's amazing is they've actually built what Paul Moritz said, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago. We're building a software mainframe. And that's exactly what VMware was. Now the marketing people got a hold of Paul and said, don't ever say that again. But that's what he built. You think about a mainframe, it runs any workload. It runs any application. It's awesome at recovery when something goes wrong. I mean, that's what they've built. And so, hey, you're going to risk your business by migrating off of that to save a few bucks and kill your business. I mean, it's just not worth the risk.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, prices are going up.
Yeah. Have you, and I don't know if you have any insight to this. I don't know if you've spoken to anybody. If you are a VMware customer, I mean, I have to imagine, if you're going to the VMware event, and I forget what it's called, I'm just going to call it VMworld. I forget what the new name is. I mean, question number one has just got to be, what's our relationship going to be? Do you have any sense of like, what is a CA customer or Symantec customer's relationship with that company today? And like, you know, what do you think the message is going to be that VMware is going to, I mean, they're going to of course try and say, hey, don't worry about it. Everything's going to be cool. But What do you speculate they might be saying here, you know, come fall for their big event?
Yeah, so it's a VMware Explore.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, we have some glimpses of this. I saw a report in CRN where the title was VMware says Broadcom acquisition won't be like Symantec. I think it will be more like Symantec than it won't, but I think that's the message they're sending to employees.
Right.
I saw another article where Pat Gelsinger, also CRN, they did a good job here, where Gelsinger said, he said, if the acquisition, I've kind of mixed on the acquisition, and he said, if it helps VMware be a more compelling, innovative growth story, then it's good. If it does not, then it's not good. Well, it's definitely not about making VMware an innovative growth story. Now, is that not good? It's not good for the VMware employees that are going to get, you know, fired.
Right.
It's good for investors. That's what this is about. It's about Octane returning value to shareholders. And you know, it's as watchers of VMware for decades, you know, you got to be a little sad about, you know, the beginning of this new era, because VMware has been such a hotbed of innovation and ecosystem enablement over the years. But hey, you can't fight it. I mean, it's the trend.
Yeah, I think there's sort of will be two sort of interesting lasting questions, or at least over the next couple of years. The first one's going to be, you know, VMware, this hotspot of innovation, you know, assuming the things happen that we expect to happen, you know, do we see a new explosion of you know, engineers who are like, well, I've had this idea for a while. I've probably been sitting around vesting stock, and now is my time for going and doing something. Like, will we see a big, you know, kind of explosion of, you know, a year from now, hey, this is this startup, and, you know, they're 10X VMware engineers. I got to imagine some of that will happen, although it's not the best time to be taking VC money. That to me will be interesting. Like all of the, like I think back to all of the second day keynotes that they have where the CTO comes out and he talks about the next new thing. And then a year later, we all scratch our head and go, hey, what happened to that thing? Like, I feel like maybe a lot of those may spin out if they're not, you know, restricted by intellectual property somehow.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think there's going to be, you know, brain drain. And that's, I think, fine with Broadcom.
Yeah.
You know, I actually don't think it's necessarily a bad time to start a company and you know, raise capital. I think from the venture perspective, you know, there's always good times, bad times. When the market's hot, it's great to sell an IPO, but valuations suck for VCs. When the market's like it is now, hey, it starts to get more attractive, and I think there's maybe more M&A opportunities. I mean, the example that you kind of lean toward is Oracle, but even Oracle spends a lot of money on R&D to be highly differentiated.
Right.
And I think, but I think that's the closest. I think clearly Broadcom spends on R&D, but it spends on R&D that is going to allow it to continue to extract lifetime value from its customers. So it's a little bit Oracle-like in that sense. This is Brian. This is why I was always in favor of a VMware spin-in to Dell. It wouldn't have made Michael Dell as liquid and wealthy. But I think it would have created a real powerhouse in infrastructure, the Oracle of infrastructure, if you will. Of course, it would have pissed off the ecosystem. But I'll throw one more curve at you. You know, the shareholders, VMware shareholders have an option. They can take cash or stock, or I guess some combination. You know, what if Michael Dell, who's, you know, he's still pretty young and vibrant, what if he takes all stock?
Right? Yeah.
And what Hock Tan's, you know, he's up there. He's in the like early, maybe mid 70s. What about Michael Dell as chairman of Broadcom? How awesome would that be? And then maybe Project Monterey lives.
Well, I was gonna say the last sort of thing I had in mind, I guess the last footnote to VMware is gonna end up being you know, Michael Dell. What did he turn like $4 billion in trying to acquire EMC into something like $40 billion or something like that? I mean, what an amazing, I mean, I feel like there's going to be Harvard Business School case studies written about the financial and the engineering that went on between those two gigantic, I mean, that's $100 billion worth of acquisitions that he was involved with.
Amazing, isn't it? I mean, you know, okay, quote unquote, only $4 billion that he and, you know, Aegon put shelled out. But I mean, that was the only amount of money they put out for $67 billion acquisition.
Right.
They delevered, restructured Dell's balance sheet, you know, basically, you know, got themselves reasonably, you know, liquid, and took the company public again. I mean, absolutely amazing that occurred. It is a business school case.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. And it's going to be one of those ones that, you know, he's a nice guy. He's a smart guy, but I guarantee he's going to be telling you at the VMware event or the next Dell event, he's going to go, you know, Dave, I got a whiteboard somewhere that planned this all out. Yeah. He's going to expect you to believe it.
But gosh, Brian, I mean, you think about the timing of this, right? Because the acquisition was 2015. A lot of people thought interest rates were going up and they were going to have all this debt, which they did. And I mean, it couldn't have been timed more perfect. I guess it could have been timed a little bit better before the market crashed that they sold it. I guess that's the other thing. There's a go shop period. But I think Hock Tan, you know, when he saw the quarter, he could have probably pulled an Elon Musk and come in and said, yeah, you know, 60 billion. What about 50?
Right.
But I think it's somewhat, I think, out of respect for Michael probably would have said, no way, you know, smart. I think he made a really strong offer. I don't know who else would shell out that kind of dough. Would Google step up and do that? I doubt it. So I think he saw, hey, I'm going to lock this thing up and take it off the table. And I think his number does that.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, just like when Red Hat got acquired by IBM and people said, oh, maybe they could have gotten acquired by, you know, any of the cloud providers or, you know, anybody who kind of wanted to get after the enterprise. I think the reality is at those numbers, even though the cloud providers have, you know, just truckloads of cash from other parts of operations, they all looked at it and they said, those numbers don't make sense if we're looking at it from a purely growth business. And I think we're going to look back at this and go, the Broadcom thing, if it pans out the way that you've sort of mapped it out, which makes a lot of logical sense, like the only way that number makes sense is if you treat it, you know, not like a growth thing anymore, but you treat it like a, you know, like a private equity would, and go, you know, extract as much value out of it as you possibly can, and put it back into the rest of your model, which is built around, you know, not necessarily innovation, but, you know, hyper efficient use of resources. And, you know, I think that'll be really the interesting difference between, say, like if you ever did a comparison of what it looks like between IBM acquiring Red Hat, which was, you know, intended to be a innovation-driven thing, get them out of the doldrums of only being a mainframe company, and what Broadcom's doing, acquiring a sort of a similar huge enterprise infrastructure company, and, you know, look at those in 3 or 5 years or something like that. That'll be an interesting comparison someday.
That's interesting. I, when you look at Red Hat, I always felt like a lot of the justification for Red Hat from IBM, which was sensible, was, hey, we got this huge services arm, and we can modernize your application portfolio using OpenShift, and that's clearly happening. And whereas I think the synergies for Broadcom VMware aren't necessarily as obvious. But yeah, you know, Frank Slootman wrote a book recently called Amp It Up, and he talked about that in the 80s, McKinsey put out a study showing that high growth companies, you know, generate, you know, X times more value than lower growth companies. And that's when sort of the light bulb went off in Silicon Valley. It's like, grow at all cost. Now, Slootman doesn't take that philosophy of grow at all cost. He uses a concept called inherent profitability. And I've talked to him about this, and he said, I could dial down the spending and be profitable tomorrow, but we're going after a much bigger prize. We're growing our TAM. And so my point is, VMware for years was one of those high growth companies, and its ascendancy was epic. And now it's at a point where it's become a cash cow, and Broadcom's going to milk it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they have been, you know, for all of us that have, you know, lived around this, they've been the foundation of the last 15 years of computing and enterprise growth and, you know, kind of where cloud eventually went. So, VMware is a fascinating company. All the different variations of what they look like, from, you know, Joe Tucci buying them as a little company to becoming massive, to becoming, like I used to say to John Troyer, they went from being Switzerland to Switzerland with guns, you know, when they started having their own portfolio. And it's fascinating to think about all the different ways they went through and what could have been and what really happened to them. So Dave, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you wonder if VMware was never acquired, you know, where they would have been. You know, maybe it would have turned out differently, but maybe not. You know, maybe they would have hit the same wall.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Joe Tucci was definitely a different operator than Diane Greene was. So, you know, who knows? Yeah. But David, it is always great to talk to you. We probably could, you know, chew the fat on this for another 30 minutes or 45 minutes, but thank you as always. Real quick, give folks, where's all the places they can find you, whether it's theCUBE or SiliconANGLE or out on the road?
Yeah, so I publish a series called Breaking Analysis every week on wikibon.com and siliconangle.com, and thecube.net is where we publish all of our videos, our YouTube channel, youtube.com/siliconangle, and thecube.net will tell you where we're going to be next with theCUBE, and I hope to see you out there.
Yeah. Now, I've been fortunate enough to work for you and you and John and everybody around it. It's the best place to go find news and analysis and enterprise tech. I highly recommend it to everybody. And, you know, I can't thank you again for being on today. Folks, with that, I'm going to wrap it up. Aaron and I want to thank Dave for his time and his insight. As always, I want to thank you all for listening. Thanks for telling a friend and helping us grow the show. And we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.